This is Susan V. Brock of Telluride Inside and Out. I'm speaking with Cheryl Ridmark. You probably know Cheryl by her necklace, maybe not by her name. The necklace is sort of worn universally around Telluride. It's a sort of asymmetrical arrangement of silver beads, gold, leaf-like charms, and small diamonds, worn by a lot of trendy ladies. Cheryl was a classically trained painter-turned-metal artist. A show of her new jewelry opens on November 29th at the Telluride Gallery of Fine Art. Hey, Cheryl, thanks for joining me.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So why the switch from oils to metal? And in what way does your painterly background still influence your work?
As much as I love painting and the scale of it and the smell and the visceral quality of moving paint around on the canvas, I find myself just as attracted to and comfortable with a torch. So once an art teacher of mine handed me a torch and said, "Why don't you try this?" I was just smitten. The idea that you can melt and fuse and solder and cast and all the things that you can do with the metal is fascinating to me. And that you can work sculpturally and intimately, and people wear it on their bodies. And, it was a hard choice because I still, when I look back, it's so much easier in some ways to do a painting and know that it's going to be on a wall instead of designing a piece of jewelry knowing it's going to be on a body and it has to be engineered in a way that's going to last and hold up and still be beautiful through the wear and tear of someone's daily life. And the way that painting still influences my work is I am coming back to enameling, which is something that I did in college, but set aside because I couldn't see any practical application to make a living doing it. But there have been a lot of advances in the enameling technology, and I've been experimenting with pigments on three-dimensional forms so that I can build kind of my botanical petal pieces and now add color to them and also protect the surface from abrasion and the metal won't wear, and hopefully I'll be able to expand my repertoire into more color because I feel like I work pretty much in black and white and gold, which I think is universally wearable, but I think, you know, it's fun to have a little color and a little punch in the jewelry also.
Thank you for that. Now let's talk about your technical training at the University of Minnesota, San Francisco State, Revere Academy of Goldsmithing, and also add to that, why was your time at the then Crynest factory so influential?
Well, the University of Minnesota was where I went actually after I had gone to the vocational technical school. I had started at Minneapolis Votech, and I went through the jewelry program there. And I wanted to continue, but I also felt that it was too technical and not artistic enough. So I ended up in the fine arts program at the U of M with the weaving department across the hall and jewelry on the other side and playing with a torch and having an amazing time, which is great, very developmental. I had the great good fortune of studying with William Harper, which was one of the reasons why I took up enameling. And it was great for exploration. At one point, when I was a junior, my instructor, Joe Ordos, told me I had to go to either the East Coast or the West Coast in order to finish my education because I had topped out there. And when I was looking at, you know, the different schools, I chose to come west because I've always been drawn to San Francisco for some reason. And once I got there, I just thought I had landed in paradise. And so then I was at San Francisco State. There I had the great good fortune of being able to study with Angela Davis. She was teaching in the Women's Studies program. And that was quite eye-opening and head-turning. I wasn't sure if I was actually going to stay in the arts program, but I did, and declared my major in metals there. Tex Geiling was my instructor. And after I left SF, two things happened. One, I just took a few, advanced diamond setting classes, channel setting and pave at the Revere Academy, studied with a really great guy, Frank Trozzo. And when gold was $800 an ounce back in the, when was that? Back in the 80s. It was really hard to make a living, and I heard about this job at a factory in San Francisco. And there was a journeyman opening as a bench jeweler. And when I walked in there, it was like Alice going through looking glass. It was an old-world, die-struck, handmade, saw-pierced factory where they made jewelry that was so delicate and just gorgeous, but it was also really, really strong. And what I loved is I got to see the whole manufacturing process from the beginning of pouring an ingot and rolling it out and blanking it to setting up a press, stamping out a part, then taking it to the bench and doing all the handwork and finishing it and having the setter set it and the polisher polish it and then put it in a bag and send it out. And I had the opportunity of trading with real master metalsmiths and diamond setters, unlike any other place I've ever been. And you don't get that kind of education in a university system or in a vocational situation also. And so I felt really blessed to have been there.
So it was kind of a walk back into the future.
Well, it was certainly a walk back into craftsmanship, you know, where craftsmanship was the state of the art. You know, it's like there are guys there now that, you know, they can make Fabergé eggs. You know, they can look at an egg and tell you how it's done and make one. You know, and that kind of craftsmanship doesn't exist except for in small pockets, you know, in very... you know, not too many places in the world anymore.
So I should have said a walk back in time into your future.
Yeah, exactly.
So you attended the Minneapolis Art Institute in the late 1980s, and apparently that change, that time, changed the direction of your work. Talk about the show and the aha moment.
You know, I don't remember the name of the show. I just remember it was a jewelry retrospective, and it went from... like jewelry from D.C., you know, pre-Utruscan, really simple gold bands, and then all the way up to, like, Tiffany trophy engraved, enamel encrusted, amazing huge things. And it was set up historically, so as you're walking through, you can kind of see what... not the trend, but what the craftsmanship at the time was and how the craftsmen were actually working. And you could keep seeing the development, like each section would get more complicated and more embellished and more and more and more. And by the time I reached the end and came back to the beginning, I realized that the beginning had more of like spiritual simplicity that I resonated with and was moved by, even though I appreciate really fine craftsmanship, you know, and being able to, you know, build incredibly complicated things. But I'm really drawn to the comfort and, I guess, reverence almost of the simplicity.
Okay. Thank you. You once considered a career in research botany. What happened to set you on the path you took instead? And also comment on the fact that making jewelry does not change the world. Perhaps your research botany might have.
Well, research botany is not isn't something that I've set aside. I'm a very avid gardener. I'm signed up for the Master Gardener program here for the UC Extension. And when you see my working time, heavily influenced by botanical forms and nature.
True. Okay.
And you're right. You know, I used to think the same thing. You know, I'm making jewelry. Why? And I think what I'm really drawn to is that jewelry can and quite often is a ceremonial object. It's a gift given in love. It's a symbol of a commitment. A lot of times it's a gift for a celebration, a commemoration, a marking of time. You know, and I find something really touching and tender about that. And now when I hear stories of how pieces that I have made have been the only thing that people have taken to wear when they're going through their chemo, and they won't, you know, leave it somewhere because it's that important to them, or that I am about to receive a necklace from a client of mine to clean it up and refurbish it to pass it on to her daughter because her daughter has wanted it for a long time, and she's looking forward to having her mom's necklace. And then now her mother is actually getting a different one. And I've watched that mother and daughter communication at my booth where the mom and daughter kind of pick it out together knowing that it's going to be handed down. And I really like being part of that. It's an honor, actually.
I don't think I could ask you to say another word.
Thanks.
This is Susan Deeprock, Telluride Inside and Out, speaking to the lovely Cheryl Ridmark. Her new work will be at the Telluride Gallery of Fine Art as of December 29th. Thank you very much for sharing your thoughts with me.
Well, thank you.